up north of Gardendale or down south past Vestavia. Turn up your sound and listen well, cause we got something to say to ya. Korean and Claypo, they in the know. Their topics cover A to Z. So whether you drive fast or slow, just sit on back and feel the beat. It's Curry and Claypo.
Good morning! Hey! Cyber Monday!
Yeah.
What's up, man?
Welcome. I feel like it's gotten to the point where so Black Friday starts on Thanksgiving. Cyber Monday starts on
Black Friday starts the week before.
Right, no, you're right. And then Cyber Monday starts on Black Friday. And then there's clearance sales all around. Like I feel like it's lost its meaning. Like it's you know what I mean?
It just means the same thing. It just means it earlier.
But so it's not a special day.
Sure it is. Cyber Monday. There's only one Cyber Monday.
Yes, but the same deals.
Every Monday's Cyber Monday though.
That's a good. Thank you. That's what I meant.
Yeah.
I did all my Cyber Monday shopping on Saturday. No.
You have Cyber Tuesday, Cyber Wednesday, Cyber
Thursday.
Every day
is a cyber, yeah.
Mm-hmm. You're a cyber guy, and I just tweeted out from a Cyber Monday to a cyber rocker. We're cyber rockers.
We are.
Yeah.
Saw a bunch of Amazon trucks on my way home. I sent to you the cargo ship.
Tell people where you were at.
So I was in Savannah, Georgia.
Yes.
And we were staying at a place, at Airbnb that used to be from the 1800s was a storefront. And so it sits right on the river. Mm-hmm. And so we're sitting there and just hanging out. And all of a sudden, Jules runs and she's like, it got dark out on the river because it's all lit.
Yeah.
It's one of the giant cargo ships.
Oh, yeah.
Right. Oh, yeah. So we thought, well, that's how novel. I mean, they're big.
That's
huge.
Cool. Yeah, they're
then
huge.
Then we come to find out, because we were there for 5 days,
yep,
about every 35 minutes, another one's coming back and forth. So I was posting a lot. I found everybody's stuff.
Yeah.
I know where everybody's stuff is. Somehow it's in Savannah, Georgia. And what's really interesting is the first 2 days we were there.
Yeah.
Now, this may have been me because I wasn't standing by the window all the time. But the first 2 days, they were coming. Everything was coming in to the harbor.
Yeah.
And then by Saturday, so it was all coming this direction in. And then Saturday, everything was going that way.
Yeah.
So I feel as if, like, either
empty.
Well,
when
you
leaving?
No, they had, you can't tell.
Yeah.
Like, because the stuff was, there were still cartons on there.
Sure. Yeah.
So I don't know if, I don't know if they put new cartons on. So I was texting and I was sending to all my friends who were in this sort of industry. I said, your stuff got here.
Yeah.
And now it is, now it's being delivered back out.
Yeah.
Texted my brother. I said, I found all your stuff. Yeah. It was really, that, and I watched the Iron Bowl on my phone.
Yeah.
During the Christmas boat parade, and I felt slightly guilty until I looked around, and there were a hell of a lot of Alabama and Auburn fans looking at the Christmas parade and also watching their phone as well.
Yeah.
Reading the instructions, as myself included, about what happens after the third overtime.
That was a lot of fun.
What happens after I was trying to, now you're a sports guy. What would have happened?
Let's back it up a little bit.
Yeah, because I got lost.
Because you haven't been on, you haven't been here the last week.
I've been on. You've been paying attention.
The whole Saban rant.
Oh, okay.
Let's back it up a little bit.
You're right. I put it out on social media, and you backed me off because your insight was really good.
Nick Saban's so powerful; he doesn't need Twitter.
No,
what he says goes. Greatest coach of all time in college football. He probably will be. For as long as I'm alive,
yeah.
I don't think anyone's going to win seven championships again.
Okay.
So he goes on this rant.
It was a unique rant, don't you think? I mean, unique in the, I never heard him say some of the things.
He's had one of those rants before. Yeah. From head coach. Yeah. He's had those rants about we're spoiled and yeah.
I felt like the self-absorbed word.
But we know that Nick Saban rants when he wants to make a message to his football team.
Okay.
And if you don't realize that, then what are you doing? I mean, he gets on the air and he speaks to his football team through the media, despite the fact that he says he doesn't listen to the media. He is the media, so he listens to himself. So when he's doing that, it was very patronizing to me. I loved it. It's great fodder. It's great to talk about. It's and the people are clapping in the restaurant. And I'm like, you suckers. You're all suckers. You're sitting here listening to this crap. Because there is a faction of fans that, you know, think that winning by three is not enough. We know that if you're favored by 20 over a team, you should
win by 20.
Win pretty comfortably. Right. And if you don't, you got problems. And Alabama's had problems this year, despite the fact they've only lost one game. Great season. I tweeted this out several months ago. I don't think people realize just how special this is because we're living in the moment. When you're living in a moment, you take a lot of things for granted. You just don't understand just how incredible this run is. And it really is. Enjoy it while you can, because I'm telling you, when he's gone, I don't think we're ever going to see anything like it in college football again. And that speaks to the testament of who Nick Saban is and how he molds his players and what he gets out of them. But when he's sitting there going to rant, I'm like, Alabama's in trouble. They're in trouble. He's trying to let us, and he said that at the end of the game, and he was kind of jovial and chuckle and wasn't angry. And he said, listen, I just told the guys to have fun. Go have fun in the second half. Go have fun. Enjoy the game. I don't know if that's exactly what he said or paraphrased. I can't imagine him doing that because we've seen him fly off the coop.
Wait, so you lost me. So what is it? I mean, I understand the messaging. What message was he trying to send to his players?
There has been a leadership issue.
Yes.
On that football team.
Yeah.
And leadership carries a lot of weight.
Yeah.
We know we got a leader on defense. We know who he is. And obviously, Bryce can be considered. But there are some guys that need to shore it up.
Okay.
And suck it up for the guys who come in. And I think he knows it's been a tough season. Listen, in the past, whenever Alabama has a close game, it's like, oh, I'm jumping Alabama next week. Right. They're going to kill them. Right. They're going to absolutely. And that didn't happen this year.
No.
So they got some issues. And to sit there, to put a goose egg up in the first three. So the message was, hey, listen, guys, I don't think we have the team we thought we had. We have it in here somewhere in this locker room that we have what it takes to win a game 49-3, but it's not being portrayed on the football field. Now, who's going to be the one to step up? And I think the message was, I think they were going through the pain of hearing all the distractions. He hates distractions.
Yeah, I know.
Distractions are, oh, Alabama's in trouble. Those are distractions. You win your box, you play your role, you do the best you possibly can, you leave it on the football field. And I think that's what his message was. His football team was, hey, listen, stop listening to all the crap. Stop listening to how great you are. Stop listening to how bad you are. And go do your job. And we'll win the football game, and we'll be fine and play your 60 minutes.
So the message was, because essentially that's what he... Even though he was sort of...
The message is if you play your best game, we cannot be beaten.
And what are you saying? But that's what I'm saying. So let's just dive deeper into it. I want to make sure I understand this. So what's veiled, that's the message to players. It's kind of veiled in, hey, stop expecting us to win by, because if we win, we win.
Yeah.
And when we... You know, and if we don't win or if we're frustrated, there's no one more disappointed than our players and blah, 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 blah. But it essentially, that is what that was. The Trojan horse was just kind of like, I don't.
You can't have it both ways. And what I mean by that is, you know, and I remember doing the show with Jay Barker and Aldo Greco in Jay's year in 92. They won a couple games by like 3 or 4 points. I think they had a really tough game against Southern Miss or La Tech or something like that. And a win's a win.
Right.
We get that. Ask Cincinnati if a win's a win right now.
Right.
Because winning by 20 ain't enough for them.
Right.
You know, we want to see, if you're playing a lousy team, you should win by 40 or 50. And if you don't, then you got things to work on. Now, you may be banged up, or maybe you got second stringers in or whatever. But we always say a win's a win. Oklahoma early in the season, 8-0, and no one was giving them any. Iowa was number two in the country. Did anyone think Iowa was number two in the country? No, it fell out. We've realized it. We got one more game. We got a championship game coming this weekend. My point is, though, is I don't mind him using the media to speak to his football team, because I know he does that.
Right.
And so he went on his rant.
He shouldn't have gone on the rant about the fans.
No, and I think his rants are calculated.
Okay.
I think rarely someone may ask a question where he just kind of goes off, because he stopped a couple times, composed himself, and then went back on the rant again.
Yes.
And then, of course, Eli Gold, you know.
But do you think he doesn't? Okay, so I guess this is the part I'm trying to figure out, because you texted me. Because I was one of the,
I had the problem was with the fans, and then the only thing he didn't do is drop an F-bomb or drop.
But do you think it's fair of him? That's what I'm saying. Do you think that he meant what he said about sort of fans, the self-absorbed piece.
Well, sure.
Okay. So, yeah. So that is something he's talking to his.
But that's voice. That's in any successful situation.
Right. He's basically. But he's
New
saying,
England Patriot fans are self-absorbed.
So is that? But is that? It, was that wrong?
But that's a small. It's a small faction. No, he can say whatever he wants.
I know.
It's
he small. Can, I know. He can small, say whatever he wants.
It's a small faction of fans. Most fans do appreciate what Alabama's doing. And they appreciate how fortunate and blessed they are to have Nick Saban and have right. an Alabama football team that plays like that. And yeah, Alabama is going to get everyone's best shot every single week, and it's right. very, very difficult. But so when that game started, I was like, 19's too much. It's still a rivalry game. First of all, we know really weird, funky things happen when you play down at Jordan-Hare.
That is
Alabama's
true.
Had all kinds of weird things That's happen right. down there. So, you know, so to have a goose egg through three quarters, I was kind of like, here we go. But I will premise this, and I'm not hammering on Nick Saban by any stretch. More so the fans that, yes, like, stop, your fans. I mean, you've got brains. This is not a cult here. Realize what he's saying and appreciate the fact that there are some fans that out there that will live and die, but they also spend $50,000
okay,
on the
so what you're saying is there aren't fans, there aren't many fans who have expectations of so much more than a win. Like, you know what I mean?
There are some fans that would be off this entire week because Alabama lost on.
I'm not lost, but what I'm saying is, now that I think about it.
Those fans need to get a life.
No, I know, but let's step back again from that. Now that I think about it, I shouldn't have tweeted what I tweeted. How many fans really are there, percentage-wise, who would hammer on an Alabama that didn't win by 15?
No, they'd be self-loathing.
We should have.
I can't believe what this is happening. Blah. And you have your faction of fans that sit there and say, "What the heck's going on?" I know Kevin Skarbinski, a friend of ours, was tweeting on a couple of things about Bryce and some bad throws he made, and he got hammered for it. And I'm like, dude, he's a sports journalist. He's reporting what's going on, and he's disappointed too. We're all better off if Alabama wins. Period. If Alabama wins, we're all happy, right? For the most part, unless you're an Auburn fan. But, I mean, for the most part, and so we want to see Alabama win. But I will say this, for these fans that are fans, fanatics, the ones that are crazy, that go out and buy every new print or every new book or stand there with their tongues, you know, during 8A games looking at Nick saying, can't believe that they're within 10 feet of him, they're the ones that are also oiling this machine.
Yes, that's true.
They're the ones buying all the merchandise. They're the ones that are paying the bills. I mean, they're getting after it. And you know, there's outliers in everything in life, right? And there's for the most part, I think the Alabama fan base is one of the best and most rabid and fanatical, if you will, to an extent. They keep it within the chaotic. But for him to go on that rant, I thought it was great. It was great radio. I knew sports radio shows were going to be blowing up the next day. It was great. But at the same time, the fans clapping, I was kind of like, come on, guys. We know what's going on here. And it also told me that this is not the Alabama we thought it was
going to
be.
Right, I thought that point of yours was, because he wouldn't have needed to say that. There was no need to say that had they been just steamrolling everybody.
Yeah, exactly. So
it was fascinating. So all right,
But to give him credit, how they won that football game was incredible. I would say, from top to bottom, from coaching staff to the last player on the roster, how they pulled that game off should speak volumes about how incredible that football team is. It would be a shame now for them to get their asses handed to them by Georgia, which, by the way, they're a 6.5-point dog. It's the first time in 92 straight games since 2015 that Alabama is an underdog in a football game. The last time they were an underdog, to the Georgia Bulldogs, the blackout game, and a game where they absolutely hammered Georgia. The last two times they've been underdogs, they won outright. So if you're one of these people that likes to play handicaps and look at different numbers.
Do you think that I was with a Georgia fan at the...
Georgia's a different breed this year, man.
Yeah, so I was with a Georgia fan, and we were watching on the phone as the parade was happening and trying to read what the rules were. And when they went for the extra point versus the 2 point to win the game. Yep. The kid I was with, it was like, oh, you know, they should have gone for 2. I'm like, no, that made sense to me, Nick Saban, because it made it, and this was
if you were 19-point dog, maybe
right. But otherwise, what it says is the more time we have to play, the more we can rely on our foundation. Is that, I mean,
yeah, and their time of possession was good. They had Auburn's defense on its heels. There was no reason not to go with it. No, they did the right thing there. No. And quite frankly, you have a lot more to lose. Do you want to hang your entire season? Because they lose that game, they're done.
Right.
They're finished. I mean, if they beat Georgia, there was an outside chance that a two-loss team, but it's never happened before. So, no, I'm not going to hang my entire season on a three-yard play. No.
Okay, so what happens? We were wondering this. What happened? What could have happened if it kept going?
What do you mean?
What happens after four overtimes?
You just keep going for two.
But does it get close? Do they change the line? Do they change where the
ball is? No, that's the other thing that was really screwy is the reason we changed the format from starting at the 25 over and over and over again, which I really like, because you had a couple of 6-7 overtime games, and they were epic, but they were once in 5 or 6 years. And we talked about them. We had a 9 overtime game earlier this year because we're doing 2-point conversions from the three. Every time the overtime was over, they made the teams walk all the way back to the other end of the football field. I'm like, I could get like a Charlie horse or a cramp walking 70 yards. Just do it from the same damn end zone. Well, what are you guys?
Exactly.
You're telling the guys you don't want to extend yourself any more than you have to. That's why we're doing this 2-point conversion thing, so we're not having more plays, right? Well, stop making them go back and forth. It's stupid. I mean, okay, now we have to go to the south end. Now we have to go to the north end. Now we got it's like just – just let them line up and keep going again. That's kind of funny.
All right, so there really is. So you just keep going until somebody...
Yeah, you just keep going until someone doesn't score 2 points. If you miss your 2-point conversion, then I have a chance to win. And if I miss it, then you go to another overtime.
I think you should go then to the kickers.
No, you'll never go to the
kickers shooting.
Alabama doesn't ever want to go to their kickers. They've had issues in the past.
It was great. It was great to watch.
It's the first time, I cannot believe, it was the first game in Iron Bowl history to go overtime.
Yeah, that's what it's
saying. That is amazing.
I also saw a quote somewhere, and I know this... I didn't fact check this. Somebody posted, one of their journals posted, at a minute 47 left in the game, Auburn had a 99-point-something percent chance of winning.
Uh-huh. Yeah. And Gary Danielson, God love him, who we've had on our show numerous times when I was doing the sports thing, he put the jinx on. Auburn hasn't made that one mistake, and boy, the next play, man, there was the mistake, and I've tweeted it out. Thanks, Gary Danielson, CBS jinx. No, but I mean that game of all the Iron Bowls I've seen, and I've seen 100 of them, that was probably the most heart-wrenching, rip your heart out, pull it out, because Auburn felt comfortable, I think, as comfortable as they could feel.
Yeah.
And their entire season is always, you know, when I first moved here, it doesn't matter if you go 1-11, as long as that one win is against your rival.
That's right.
It is the best rivalry in all of sports, period, I think. Boston Red Sox, Yankees, Michigan, Ohio State, which that was a blowout. It was incredible. So I give all the kudos to Nick Saban. Now, people are like, man, you can't win a game like that and not have something special happen at the end of the year. Now, I mean, you want to add some extra pressure,
because
people are like, this is meant to be. If Alabama can somehow pull out a victory against Georgia, and again, Georgia,
is an absolute machine.
Georgia is that one team where
yes.
They're as consistent. Their defense is lights out, unbelievable. And Alabama's offense, you know, we keep talking about it. You know, I talked about a few weeks ago, I'd love to see that Ohio State offense, because I think that offense is certainly more consistent than Alabama's has been this year. I'd love to see that Ohio State offense against Georgia's defense. Now we're going to see this high-vaulted Alabama offense. They put a goose egg up in three quarters. Yeah. I mean, if I'm Kirby Smart, I'm looking at the Auburn blueprint right now, and I'm going to study that thing and figure it out. So it's going to be great. We're going to see what happens. And again, it happens every year, just like it does in college basketball. It happens every year.
There's always
chaos.
That's right.
And we're sitting there trying to figure out 3 weeks out, okay, well, if they win, just Cincinnati still has a ball game to play. Oklahoma State's in the mix. Notre Dame fell a little bit. I think it's funny because Notre Dame is that one team. It's like no one wants to talk about them, but they just keep winning. They just keep getting there. They're number six, so they're sitting right there in the mix. It's going to be super exciting. I can't wait. It's going to be great.
Do we have any, besides, I keep saying this, the Nick Saban protege piece, the students of Nick Saban. Mm-hmm. I think it's absolutely fascinating to watch, particularly the students of Nick Saban who are now coaches who are coaching the SEC and in some cases beating him.
Yeah.
It's
happened once.
Right. Do we have, but he's creating, you know, right? He's creating this lineage. We talked about Belichick. I was trying to think of other sports where you've got sort of the grand old mentor, mm-hmm. and you've got his understudies who have now gone out to create successful careers, but while they're competing with him, right? Mm-hmm. It's one thing if he did all this, yep. then he steps out and okay, these are all the people who coached or who trained under him. And so, but is there anything else that we've got in other sports? I can't think of.
No, we haven't families. This is when your son finally beats your ass at chess.
That's what I'm saying. That's what I'm saying. Because it'd be one thing if we use it in families. It'd be one thing if you played the game. Now you've stepped away and you're watching. Oh, it's my son. But it's different because you're on the court still.
Yeah.
So do we have that in any other sport?
No, Aldo Greco tells a story. You know, he used to, Trey's son was a great golfer and got scholarships and everything else. But Al's a hell of a golfer, and it's one of those sports you could play well into your 50s.
Right.
And he knew the day when his son, he finally passed the torch. I was said, take it from here, son, because he beat his butt every time they got the golf course and he stuck it in his face. And then that one time he beat him, he's like, okay, I'm good. No, I mean, the ice has been broken, right? When A&M finally beat him.
Right.
The first time in, 24 times that one of his proteges won a football game, and now Kirby could be the second if he gets it done in the SEC championship game. I don't know. That Georgia is one of the stoutest looking football teams I've ever seen. That defense is just, we say defense wins championships. But you just don't know.
It's very interesting.
I'm sitting there watching my Bengals yesterday. Right. Put up 31 in the first half. I'm going, and then 2 weeks ago, they looked like they couldn't score a touchdown against.
Did you change your shirt or something?
I didn't move from the couch. Actually, I didn't watch part of the game. I was looking there. I was running some errands. I was looking at my phone. I was like, 31-3. Is this right? The Bengals won, but you just don't know. You just don't know. It's easier to handicap college games because you're talking 18, 19, and 20-year-olds. And when you throw a lot of money at people, and you have matchup issues and injuries play a lot into it. You can have games where 1 week you're up 25-0, and the next week, you're down 25-0. But it's gonna be exciting. It's gonna be interesting. And I know that Alabama's good for college football. College football is better when Alabama's in the Final Four. Period. And so the committee, which obviously is subjective, because that's why we have a committee.
Right.
They want to see Alabama in, and they'll do whatever it takes. But you can't put a two line. They lose to Georgia, they're done. They beat Georgia, they're in. And so that's what it comes down to. But if they lose to Georgia, some people are saying that if they lose to Georgia in a close game, they're not getting in.
No.
Now, is Cincinnati a better team than Alabama?
Mm-mm.
No. But will Cincinnati get in over Alabama if Alabama loses?
Yes.
Because they didn't take care of business.
That's right.
They didn't do it. So, exciting stuff. But I love, I saw the rant. I love the rant. It's funny because
his rants are so interesting. They're calculated. I mean, they may be calculated, but you're right. They're these. Never thought about the way you described it. You know what it reminds me of? You know when your kids were babies, and they'd be screaming, little infants.
Yeah.
And they'd settle down, and you'd think. Right, they settle down, and then all of a sudden it ramped back up.
Uh-huh.
That's how his rants are.
Yeah,
like you, he goes, and then he kind of it feels like he's ending.
Yeah,
looks like he's ending.
Well, he couldn't even find the words. He was fumbling around there, and they were letting him go because you don't interrupt. And then it was kind of like, and then it ended, and then he thought, "Ooh, I got another one," and then he knows what he's doing. He's a super smart guy. It was great.
I loved to see him after the game. I really did. I told you, I love I call it the kinder, gentler, but I think it's the older, wiser.
Yeah, we talked about it.
Right. I like to see, not that he should be that way all the time, but it's always been my frustration. It's like, come on, Nick. Come on, you saw your wife, the kids won. Like, just give us a little bit of don't look uncomfortable.
Yeah.
And he did it. And it makes me feel so much.
I think we're finally getting to the point in his life where he realizes that it is more than just winning the football game or losing the football game.
I think he realized.
Listen, Nick Saban will never get angry if every player does everything they're supposed to do, everything they were told to do, they're in the right position so they don't make mistakes and they get their asses handed to them. He will go, listen, they were a better football team. We did everything, but he does not. He's got that Vince Lombardi thing. Strive for perfection so you can be excellent.
He's got John Wooden, the same thing, right? John Wooden was, doesn't matter if you're prepared and you're prepared at your best, then whatever happens, doesn't really matter because you've played as best you can, which is, I mean,
do the best you can and see what happens. One of the guys who does the best he can, and sometimes we make mistakes, and he's always there to see them. Spy for Rent's Jeff Hammock. Yep. Spy for Rent, Spy the Number 4 Rent. He's wonderful. If you need a spy, you need a private investigator, GPS tracking, bug sweeps, alternative drug screenings. He does it all. He's been doing it for well over 30 years. The guy's unbelievable. 205-790-3051, 790-3051. A lot of weird, strange things happen over the holidays, my friend.
Guys
buying two gifts, one for their wife, one for their girlfriend. I mean, you don't know. Guys going hunting on weekends. Just saying, you don't know. He's staying super busy over the holidays.
Oh, yeah.
790-3051, Spy for Rent, spy4rent.com. Dr. Josh Klapo is back in the studio here. I hope you had a fantastic Thanksgiving.
I did.
I'm glad.
It was a little different, but it was good.
I fried my turkey. I mentioned fried.
Oh, yeah. So we had a question about that.
So I get the turkey. I bought the butterball, and then the woman at Publix is like, just get a Publix turkey. It's 49 cents a pound. It's right. The same turkey. I was like, good thinking. So I went, and it was $7 for like a 14-pound turkey. Cheapest thing you could find in the grocery store. And I said, how do I thaw it? And I know I could Google it. She said, let's leave it on the counter. I said, leave it out? She said, yeah.
Yeah, you can.
And I said, are you sure? She goes, yeah. And so I called the Butterball Turkey Hotline. They're like, never, ever leave poultry out. You've got to thaw it either in the refrigerator or in water. Don't ever leave it out because once it spoils, it doesn't matter how you fry it, you're going to throw your guts up. Okay, so I didn't have time to thaw it out in the refrigerator because I got it on Monday.
Right.
So I had to do the water thing where I had to put it in water like 7 or 8 hours and then turn it over and switch it out every 30 minutes. Well, 11 o'clock on Wednesday night.
It's still frozen.
No, it's fine, but I forgot to take it out of the sink. So he sat out raw all night till Thursday. I woke up and they're sitting in the sink, and I was like,
"Yeah,
okay, well, it's Thanksgiving. You're frying. We'll just fry you up, and we're gonna eat you. We're gonna get after it." So I fried it, and the thermostat on my fryer wasn't coming on to 375. So I just left it in there a little longer, and it came out. And it looked like the Griswold turkey. It was a 14-pounder when it came out. It looked like a Cornish hen, But it was really good. If you eat anything really, really hot, it's always delicious, even if it's dry. So it turned out really, really good.
I don't understand. So what kind of fryer do you have? Because this is a big thing, right?
I have a Butterball turkey fryer.
Is it a thing where you're using 12 gallons of whatever?
Yeah, and by the way, peanut oil, $18.50 a gallon.
Right. So
cost me $54 to fry a turkey.
Right. Right.
And I was like, is there anything else in here we want to fry? Because I'm using this oil for something.
Right. So we were talking about that. Jules was saying by the time you... and we love deep fried turkeys.
Yeah.
But by the time you buy the oil for the turkey.
No, it was a $100 meal with a turkey.
The
oil. I was like, how much is peanut oil? It's peanut flipping oil. $2 a gallon?
Gas prices?
gas prices look good. I was like, can I use gasoline instead?
It's $18 a gallon?
$18 a gallon for peanut oil. I was like, and that was not even the brand name stuff. So I had to get 3 gallons, and there was a 2 gallon limit. And I said, and she's like, you can only get 2. And I said, I got a three gallon fryer. And I said, I'm getting 3.
Oh.
And she's like, okay. And she left me alone. She saw that. Wow. Yeah. I'm getting 3. So it turned out great. It was a it's true though. You can't screw up a deep fried turkey.
Oh, so good.
Kids loved it. It was fantastic. So it was great. Did the Christmas tree, get the tree up and upstairs. Went and went to Old Baker Farm and did the whole Griswold thing. I'm getting the point now where, you know how I am. I'm like, we're holding on to nostalgia, kids. This is a tradition.
You are a tradition. It's like Fiddler on the Roof.
And I'm newly divorced. I'm like, we ain't changing
now,
shit.
Yeah, now you
this
have
is,
to.
No, this is the real deal now. Yeah. This means a lot to Dad.
To Dad, right? It doesn't matter.
We're going Saturday morning. We're taking the saw.
Damn it.
We're going out, and we're going to find it. Of course, my 17-year-old's like,
what time are we leaving?
Do we have to go today? And I'm like, yes, we're going today.
Where are you going?
And you
are going.
Well, it's funny because now my kids realize how important it is to me, and they play along.
Yeah, it's
kind of like me going to your Little League game. I don't give a squat. I don't want to be sitting at a ballpark all day watching you play, but I'm going to play along, and so they played along, and then they end up having a great time.
It is. I mean, kids, when a divorce is happening, kids kind of go into two modes. They go into the, The rules are broken. What can I get away with?
Yeah. Yes.
Totally. That's, you know, and parents are like, oh my God, what's happened to my kids? Your kids are being normal because you've just changed the rules on them.
Yeah.
Right. So like, that's a normal behavior. I'm not saying it's pleasant, but it's normal. So that's the first one. The second one is they see their parents in emotionally different positions, hurt, sad, whatever. And so, yeah. And it's, I mean, not divorce isn't good for kids, but this being able to give of yourself as a kid because you see that it's important to your parent is an important life lesson. Now, again, you don't wish divorce as the reason, but yes, you see kids absolutely going, oh God, look, dad really likes to go for the, listen, I told you, you know, my favorite meal, one, people like pizza, steak, Thanksgiving dinner. That is my favorite meal. This year we had no Thanksgiving dinner. Because of our situation, we had appetizers and hors d'oeuvres that we cooked in the thing, and I was okay with it. I was fine. I mean, look, this is a
you
different.
You could have fried one and took it, would you?
No, but I was okay. I mean, it was like different. One kid's in England. It was all okay. I was okay. But everybody, the entire family, Jules, my daughter, my son, they're like, are you going to be okay, Dad? I'm like, yeah, what's going on? We're not having turkey and cranberries. I'm like, it's okay. At one point, we went to a Kroger on Wednesday night just to get a couple things. And like, I'm like, okay, I got to have some cranberries with the appetizer. Like, even if we're on freaking pizza, I'm going to have some cranberries. No cranberries. Nothing.
They had no cranberries.
There was nothing. I mean, not even the jelly, you know, nothing. So
you made it through.
I made it through.
You're the man.
It's about adapt or perish.
Adapt or perish. You'll hear it tomorrow night, 8 o'clock, right here on Tony Curry Radio with Dr. Alex Hublein and Dr. Josh Klapo.
It was fun.
Good. I'm glad you made it through. And also, today starts Hanukkah.
Yesterday, last night, lit the candles. Okay. I send you my.
You didn't bring your candles over. You got to bring your candles.
No, we just got home last night.
Why is it's Hanukkah, but also is it Chanukah?
No, it's Hanukkah.
Okay,
it's just spelled different because it's Hanukkah. That's the Hanukkah is the Hebrew word.
Yeah,
and the Chuch is spelled. There's a letter for the sound Ch.
Yeah,
and there's a letter for the sound Ch.
Yeah,
Hey. The letter Hey is the H sound.
Yeah,
and the letter Chet
is
CH, but because in Hebrew it's not the same, we spell it. That's why you see it sometimes H, sometimes you see it CH.
Yeah.
So people pronounce it Hanukkah or Hanukkah, and that's why you sometimes see it in a CH.
So
I never can spell it right. There's a couple K's in there.
Oh, yeah.
You throw in an AH.
Yeah.
You can put it all in.
Yeah, I know. I kept misspelling it because I kept putting two N's.
It's
like one N.
It
doesn't come up on your autocorrect. I'm like, how many words sound like Hanukkah?
You got to get super close because I had the same problem. I was like, damn it, is it two N's?
Yeah.
Is it if you, as long as you throw an A, an H, one N, and an H at the end, AH, it will help you.
Mine kept coming up Hannah. I was like,
yeah, it's not that. It's not
Hanukkah. So you lit one candle?
Mm-hmm. Last night was at sundown. You light the first candle, and it's eight nights. There is a ninth candle. It's called the Shamus. That's if you see a menorah, there's one right in the middle.
Yeah,
and that's just it's the one you use to light the other ones.
Yeah.
So you have four on each side of the menorah. By the way, menorah. It's interesting. So people think menorah is for Hanukkah. I mean, we use it for Hanukkah, but a menorah is just like candelabra.
Yeah.
Like you.
But you can light it any time of the year if you want.
I mean, yeah, you use a special one for Hanukkah, but it's the same as having a candelabra on your piano.
So you go 8 days.
8 days. Each night at sundown is when you light the candle.
And do you light the candle or do you have the lit ones, the pre-lit ones, like the bulbs?
I mean, I have one of those in the closet, but no, you light the candles.
And then what happens after the eighth night?
You're done.
Then you put it away?
Put it away to the next year.
So people that have candles in their windows the entire holiday season, that's wrong?
Hanukkah?
I see
people with candles.
It's a menorah, so, and it's the only time of the year they put,
what that means?
It's the only time they put candles in their windows.
Maybe it's a little Christmas envy. I mean,
is that what it is? Because I'll see menorahs on December 23rd, and Hanukkah's over.
No, I mean, there's nothing.
Do Jewish people do that?
No, I mean, it's not. There's nothing that says you put it up for the month of, like you guys have Advent or whatever. No, it's 8 nights, and then it's done. Now you want to leave. You want to leave a candelabra up. Because you think it's beautiful, then you can.
Oh man, we had a killer homily yesterday.
Did you?
About it was the first week of Advent.
Yes.
It was like what, and people want to know what is Advent,
right?
You know,
I don't know what that was.
It's this the preparatory aspect of what we're about ready to
this go is the curry. This and, is and, curry and clay.
No, and it's great one. Because no, it's really the whole idea of Advent is checking it back.
Yep.
And getting out of the rat race and all the distractions and the shopping and all those things and just remembering what the season really is all about and just taking it moment by moment and mm-hmm. realizing just how blessed we are to be here. And as it gets closer, obviously it gets closer to the birth of our baby Jesus. And it's super cool. And it's kind of like there was an old Andy Griffith episode. I don't know if you remember it, where a reverend comes in from out of town, from Mount Pilot or whatever. And he's talking about just slow down. Everyone just needs to slow down. Just enjoy the day, slow down, and then they're talking about, you remember those days when we used to have the band play on Sundays, we used to sit around and drink coffee and watch, so they decide that they're going to get the band back together, and what they end up doing is creating all this chaos in the course of about a 12-hour day in order to you know, is the bandstand ready, is the band, they're practicing, and they're stitching new uniforms, and everyone's going crazy, it's like, this is what I'm talking about.
It's what we do in holidays.
Just chill out.
But it is interesting because you'll see me on Fox 6 talking about this quite a bit over the next several weeks. This whole idea of, because you talk about tradition. So we love tradition. Most people do. It symbolizes all kinds of things for us, connectivity, consistency. But sometimes we love it so much that we will literally make ourselves miserable in the name of tradition, even when the tradition was not about being miserable. We will have a family gathering if it freaking kills us. We're going to decorate this tree. You know, everybody's screaming and yelling. And if somebody says, you know, well, maybe we don't need to do this. Oh, over my dead body, we're not. Well, why not? Because it's tradition. So we do. I mean, even with tradition, and I'm not talking about religious practices, but even those religious practices, you don't have to. I don't really care what your religion is. There are certain things that you are called to do in the name of your religion and practice. But most of them, this is hard for me to speak of world religion, don't require you to come at odds with your entire family, the neighborhood, everything, ruining everything. It is about you and whether it's your loved ones or your God or whatever. So it is interesting to watch the way we rigidly grasp at things that maybe we should let go of because they end up going against the meaning of the season.
Well, and like everything else, like you talk about adapt or perish, traditions, nostalgia, sentimentality, it can evolve.
Yeah,
it can evolve because those kids get older and they have their own kids inside the other. We got the tree.
Well, yours is a great example right now.
We got an 11-foot tree. I'm not saying that it's the best tree we ever got. I'm not saying it's something in thank you to Jerry Baker who took care of me on my tree.
You ever got an 11-foot tree before?
No, I measured and I was like, man, because it's hard to find the perfect tree. That's you know, it. And I'm not, you know, I'll get a defunct tree. I'll get a funky tree. I don't really care.
Did you get an 11 tree because you're divorced and you want your kids to see?
Well, and here's the deal is listen, I'm not a materialistic kind of guy.
No, you're not.
And I'm like, do we want to spend a month fighting over ornaments?
Right.
Or do I want to send it all over to your house? Yeah. You look through it.
Pick what you want.
Be fair. I didn't say be fair because I shouldn't have to.
Yes.
But be fair. Mm-hmm. Send it back. And I'll, you know, and everyone knows I'm a Christmas-like guy. And so rather than give her half of all the lights because I know she doesn't put up Christmas lights like I do.
Right.
I gave her like more than I needed to, but I was like saying, hey, I can go buy more. You know, I can put less up this year. I was just trying to make things as long as there was no resentments building up.
There
in the
you
back,
go.
Okay.
That's healthy.
She appreciated it. So I sent everything back. And then 2 days later, here's the stuff that you could have.
And
so we're going through it last night.
She leave you all the crappy stuff?
Well, yeah.
Because there's, and I'm Jewish.
All the plastic things. All the,
the ones that are broken that don't have the hooks.
And I wasn't the one that said anything. I just started, you know, the first thing I do is try to find all the ornaments the kids have made us over the years.
Right. Oh, yeah, those are great.
Yeah.
With the yarn.
And I'm trying the ones made of popsicle sticks and stuff. And
but
so
you
I'm
got 11-foot tree.
And so I'm trying to find, you know, and so I'm going, and my son goes, is this it? And I said, yeah. And he goes, where are the ornaments? And I said, this is it. Now, my ex had decorated last weekend. She went early.
Okay.
Which is totally cool. And he's like, yeah, mom's tree's got all the good stuff on it. And I said, we're not gonna do this. I said, it's no big deal. I said,
lights on your.
He's like, yeah. So I tell you what, you go over to mom's, and if you see an ornament on the tree that you want to put on this tree,
steal it.
Then say, hey, I want this ornament. Much like we did with toys. You know, what stuff do you want to go to mom's? What stuff do you want to stay at dad's? You know, but it works this way. I said, but we're not. I said, we'll build new traditions. We'll build new ornaments. We'll have new stuff.
But you have an 11-foot tree, and you have half as many ornaments.
It's not as full as it normally is.
Okay.
But that's less.
But you could put more lights.
That's less crap I got to put away.
That is true. Did you leave it lit? I mean, do you?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. How many strands did you take for 11
strands
foot
of lights. I went out and bought. My kids don't like the LEDs in the house.
Okay.
Because they're too bright.
Yeah.
So you get the other ones, they're 99 cents a box. So I spent 11 bucks and got 11 more boxes of lights. But I was like, we're not doing this. We're not. And then we're going right now. We're going right now to get those ornaments. I said, no, we're not. We're not going over to mom's to get the ornaments because it's not that big of a deal. We got plenty of ornaments here. We got plenty of remembrances here. We got some things.
I'll tell you what, because, you know, we're not doing, you know, we're half and half. So I came home. This is a good example. So I came home. We drove 6 hours last night.
Yeah.
Get home. I'm the only Jewish one home
because
my son is Jewish.
Yeah.
He's sending pictures from England. It's beautiful menorah lighting, blah, blah, blah. I'm the only one Jewish. Jewel's not Jewish. And so we're unpacking everything, and I'm up in the attic. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm looking for the menorah.
Yeah.
Thank God after I don't know how many years, we finally decided we have all, you know, it's Christmas versus Hanukkah. 27 Christmas boxes and one Hanukkah box.
Yes.
But at least Jules was, I didn't know, I used to never label it. I just shoved it right there. Jules lit. So I found the Hanukkah box, opened it up, and it was a miracle. There was the menorah. It was sitting right on top. Came downstairs. I brought one. I found one. We have a whole box of stuff, but the kids aren't there. So I got one giant dreidel. Like, you got to have something. I can't just have the damn menorah there.
Yeah.
So I go down, she's like, and I lit the candle. I'm like, Baruch Atah. She's like, what are you doing? I'm like, I'm having Hanukkah. She's like, it's like, you look depressed. I'm like, no, it's just tradition. I'm having Hanukkah myself. And that was, I mean, it took all of 35 seconds.
She should be respectful of that.
And that she was. She even asked, oh, here you go.
She should do it with you.
No, listen. And she always has. We are a absolute blended family. We celebrate Christmas and go to church. My son and I go with my daughter and wife, and they do Hanukkah. So Jules says, I'll tell you what, and this is after 6 hours of driving, she's like, I'll make you latkes.
I'm like, oh, that's nice.
Thank you, because latkes are She's like, just go get, because we like.
What is latkes? To explain to people.
The potato pancakes. Yeah. Every family has them. Yeah. It's like hash browns. So Jules says, I'll tell you what, but she likes the kind where you go, they're called Simply Potatoes. They're pre-shredded, just plain shredded potatoes. Distribution problem. I get to the market, and I live in the Bible Belt. Listen, I live in the Bible Belt. So I am not, there are certain things that I don't, when I first moved here, they never had anything. I'm like, do y'all have a menorah? A what? Right? But Publix is great. They got everything. So I'm like, okay, there's not going to be a run on these because it's not a Christmas tradition to make hash browns.
Yep.
I go there and she's like, she's looking it up and she's like, no, we don't have Fritos. We don't have cream cheese, and we don't have, I'm like, you're kidding. Like, you don't have the shredded potatoes.
Yeah.
She's like, no. So I came home.
Shred your own?
No, because it was too late. We were tired.
Yeah.
So then I call my mom, and my mom's boyfriend says, you know, because this is all my juice. You know, do you have Trader? They love to rip on the side. Do you have a Trader Joe that you probably don't? Yeah. Like, yes, we got Trader Joe's. We got tricks. He's like, they've got fabulous frozen ones.
Oh, there you go.
Really?
There you go.
Yeah, she's, and my mom's like, you should go now. Because it's like 7:30. I'm like, I'm not going now. She's like, but it's tradition.
Yeah.
Like, we got a new tradition this year. I'm lighting it, and I'm going to have some damn applesauce, which usually goes with the latke, and that's the only thing I'm going to have, and we're done with Hanukkah.
There you go. So you went to Trader Joe's?
No.
Oh, okay.
I might go today, but after, like, you're, like, people, the whole people are mean at Trader Joe's. So.
They really are.
They're not mean.
The people that work there are great. The people that go to Trader Joe's are a pain in the ass. They're uppity. They have to have their special stuff.
Right.
Yeah. Speaking of new traditions, I don't know if you saw the story. I thought it was fantastic this past weekend. At a Yorkshire pub, British fans of the band Oasis, you know the band Oasis? There was a tribute band called Noasis that was playing music on Friday night. And they evidently were really, really good. And so there were a couple of hundred people there, and it started to snow.
Yeah.
And so they were like, so they were kind of freaking out a little bit. And so some people started going home during the set because they didn't want to have any. So 61 diehard fans decided to stay till the end of the show, to which it snowed 13 inches.
Oh, in Yorkshire.
And,
wow.
So people were wanting to leave about 1:30 in the morning, and the pub owner said, listen, I don't think it's safe. Everything's snowed in. You're welcome to stay here until things clear. So the band, you know, was putting their stuff away, and he's like, hey, listen, I'll throw you an extra couple hundred bucks if you guys want to continue to play. They played till Sunday night at 4 o'clock in the morning.
Oh, my God.
61 stranded. So there's pictures. People were posting pictures on social media. The bar stayed open 24 hours a day. They were serving food. And so 61 people spent about 60 hours at this Yorkshire pub. It's called the Tanhill Inn.
I'm telling you, man, the Brits love their pubs.
Like, I'm just trying to think, how long could I listen to Oasis? And if I was stuck...
Well, if you're a cover band, like, can't you start playing some Christmas songs?
Yeah. Off-roaders and mountain rescue groups were able to transport several people out of the bar to attend the medical and family situations.
Yeah.
But most patrons didn't look back in anger and made the best of the situation with cold beer, warm fire, and plenty of Wonderwall sing-alongs.
Oh, jeez.
Those who had not reserved rooms at the end, slept on couches in the floor, did not get loud and drunk. You know why?
Why?
Because they wanted to be respectful of others.
How nice. I'm telling you.
So you close a bar in Birmingham, Alabama, from Friday night for 60 hours. And tell me if you ain't going to have a fight at some point. There was not one fight the entire time. Let's be honest, being stuck anywhere is a challenge to the mental health of some people. And yes, some are breaking point after 3 days of being confined. But we're in a tavern. We're listening to Oasis. We're eating mud pies and shepherd pies. It's a life change, and they're now going to make it an annual event. It's a new tradition.
13 inches of snow?
It just continued to snow. 13 inches that night, and they opened up, and they're like, okay, and it just kept snowing and snowing and snowing.
That's so nice.
And so now, here's a picture of this dude.
Let me see.
This dude's sitting there.
Oh, he looks so
little
British.
Tipsy. He's having some mashed potatoes and some beef and stuff, and he says, and the pub owner said, as long as you pay your tabs,
I'm telling you,
drink your beer, have a great time. And so 61 people stayed in the pub for 60 hours.
It's very different. I don't know about Britain, but the Irish are that way. It's the Irish almost have, like when we went to Ireland, it's almost a Southern hospitality kind of thing. But you're right. Yeah. Can you imagine a bar here for 60
hours? We say that though, but it depends on what part of Ireland you're in.
Yeah, the big cities. I mean,
Southern Ireland, right? It's friendly, right? Northern Ireland.
Ballymena and all the places.
Okay, then is it Northern Ireland? It's one part of Ireland super cool to be in. The other Ireland,
It's you know what it really
they fight,
is?
Right?
No. There's fights everywhere, but no. I mean, I've been all over Ireland, and generally speaking, the most welcoming, warm people. Now, again, if you're in Belfast, or any of the, it's big. The difference is it's big city versus small town.
Yeah,
that's what it is. You know, you go to London. London's like going to New York or L.A.
Yeah,
right. That's we don't really have that here. It's like I guess that'd be like going to Birmingham.
Yeah,
not really. I couldn't do Oasis for 60.
Chadwick Boseman would have been 45 today.
Oh wow,
he died over a year ago.
Yeah, this is time warp. It's a COVID time warp.
It is incredible.
Omicron or Omicron? New variant. Do you call it Omicron?
I don't even want to say it.
Omicron.
I'm not even saying it. I'm not going to say that.
I think that's a really cool name. I thought Delta was cool.
It does not exist to me. The new variant does not. I don't even say the word. Oh, by the way, Merriam-Webster released their word of the year yesterday. You know what it was?
Unprecedented.
Vaccine.
Oh, yeah.
You know what last year's word was?
Vaccine.
Pandemic.
Yeah.
You know what the word was before?
Outbreak?
Normal.
Normal. Is that a joke?
That's funny. No. No, pandemic and vaccine was the word of the year. Thanks for that. We need to know that. Russell Wilson turns 33. Howie Mandel, 66. Vince Scully is still alive.
He's 90.
He's 94. There was some really interesting news. I don't know. I don't look at crime numbers a whole lot, just based on, and we live in a nice neighborhood in the Heatherwood area. It's where the radio station is, and we have had thefts here. My next door neighbor got robbed a couple of years ago. I had a guy down the street had a pistol taken out of his car. I don't know why he had a pistol in his car. But for the most part, if we get robbed here, it's because we get too lackadaisical with our safety protocol.
Mm-hmm.
We leave stuff out in the yard. If you leave, I got an extension ladder out by the side of the house, and I can't believe it's still there. If you leave a wallet in the middle of your yard, someone's going to pick it up and steal it. It's too easy. The temptation's too much there, even though it's wrong, right? So when you leave something out for a period of time, or you leave your garage door open overnight or something like that, chances are, and we have a lot of people in this neighborhood, which I'm not crazy about, but it makes our neighborhood look nicer. They use a lot of landscaping services. There's at any point in time when you're driving down the street, someone's redoing their roof or redoing their sod or redoing something. And it's great for the neighborhood. Don't get me wrong. That's fine. They got the money to do it. Knock yourself out. Not my place. It's the same place I've had in 18 years.
And they talk about you.
Exactly. I didn't even paint the walls in 18 years. Yeah, right. And they did talk about me. And I have a trailer at my front yard, and I have trash and stuff in it. I'm the white trash of the Heatherwood community, okay? But I'm not in the neighborhood.
You don't live in Heatherwood.
I live in Marwood.
So they can't touch you.
It's the poor man's Heatherwood.
They can't touch you. There's like a line, right?
I've had goats. No, my neighbors, like, I just am who I am, and I love that. But my son, you know, can we please, like, okay, you got a problem? Go clean it up. Can we please get the brush off the driveway? It's been there for 3 weeks. I'm like, then go put it in the trailer and go, you got a driver's license. You know where the dump is? Take it. Dad's too tired. He's I'm busy. You want to make it look nicer? You make it look nicer.
Isn't it?
So people will steal things
and
take things for the most part. Yeah. I don't know if there's.
We've had our mailboxes broken into this week.
Your mailbox?
Yeah.
Well, you're easy
target. Not my house. In our neighborhood, people were taking mail.
You're a snatch and dash guy, because unless you're waiting for crap, because you get stuff every day on your doorstep,
mm-hmm.
you're an easy target.
I have clips, though.
Easy target. I can promise you there's someone casing your house. Be careful.
Thanks.
No, I'm serious.
Well, I have a massive security system.
Yeah.
I do.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. mm-hmm. I was watching my entire time while I was on trip.
So actor Seth Rogen received some backlash this week
after
downplaying crime in Los Angeles, like people breaking into cars. Casey Neistat, who's a YouTube star, shared that one of his cars had been broken into.
One of his cars.
But the Los Angeles Police Department found the perpetrator and gotten his stolen goods back, which is good.
That's nice.
Seth Rogen didn't understand all the fuss. He tweeted out that Neistat could have been mad, but Rogan doesn't personally view my car as an extension of myself, and I've never really felt violated any of the 15 times that my car has been broken into.
Wait, Seth Rogen said this?
Yes. Once a guy accidentally left a cool knife in my car, so I hope it keeps happening. Maybe I'll get something out of it. The deep privilege necessary to shrug off having your car broken into 50 times seems lost to Rogan. It's just not him. We're in a strange time in which we're lectured we're not supposed to care about the material things. Material goods shouldn't matter.
He's getting on my nerves.
I know.
He's getting on my nerves.
He's smoking too much dope.
No, he's becoming commercialized.
The problem is we're being told by people that have far too many material things.
Jeez,
the loss of material things are no big deal. Last month, White House Press Secretary Jen Psaki referred to the tragedy of the treadmill that's delayed. when talking about the supply chain crisis.
Well, yeah, okay.
She dismissed concerns about Christmas presents arriving on time as well. She makes $180,000 a year.
See, come on.
White House Chief of Staff Ron Klain approvingly retweeted someone who called economic problems like inflation high-class problems. He also makes $200,000 a year. It's very easy to dismiss economic problems that affect people all over the country when you're making more than three times the salary of the average worker.
Wait, who's saying this?
Chief of Staff Ron Klain.
No, is this the article or Seth Rogen is still saying this?
No, this is from the article.
Okay, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
Last year, they talk about the riots rage in the wake of the George Floyd killing. Right. We heard a lot of the property damage doesn't really matter. So what if it's someone's business is destroyed? They'll survive. But that dismissal property has led directly to the shoplifting sprees we're seeing in cities like San Francisco. It doesn't matter. People can just take it.
Did you see that, by the way, man?
What's that?
San Francisco, the break-in at like, it was like a Louis Vuitton or get.
Yeah, like 1,800 people or something. It's crazy. So the point is like, don't ever tell somebody how to feel. You're a psychologist. Whenever you tell someone to relax, it's the worst thing you can do. Just relax. Don't tell me how to feel. You can debate me. You can talk to me.
What you used to say is, how are you feeling right now? Yeah. I'm feeling agitated.
Yeah.
That must be really bad.
But don't tell somebody not to feel agitated or not to be
Seth
angry.
You know the problem with Seth Rogen? And I'm not saying it's him personally, but I don't know why it comes to my mind. It's the Dr. Phil thing.
Yeah.
You get bigger and bigger and bigger, and you become sort of beloved and hated, and they're kind of, everybody's waiting for the next thing you're going to say. Like, I almost feel like, do you really believe that? Or did you just kind of need to say that because you had to fill some space?
Yeah.
Your car was broken into 15 times and you weren't pissed? Yes, you were.
Yeah.
Yes, you were. Well, I shouldn't tell them what to do.
Have you had your car broken into?
Since I've moved here? No. Yeah. I had my car stolen in LA, had my car broken in LA. But this was long before, like this, I mean, I'm old. I had the lock, steering wheel lock. When I moved here, first thing I said, cause I didn't have a ton of money. I went and got the car that I needed to get a car. And I said, am I going to need to pay for an alarm here? Yeah. This was 25 years ago. And he's like, where do you live? And I told him where I live. And I was renting an apartment in River Chase area, which is a nice area.
Yeah.
And he's like, alarm? No, you don't need an alarm. I was like, what about a wheel lock? Remember the wheel lock?
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, wheel lock? He's like, son, where are you from? L.A.? I'm like, are you kidding? If I parked my car in L.A., I had a wheel lock, motion detector. Yeah. It went off all the time.
Yeah.
Right. And there was no like engine kill. I mean, and again, that sort of stuff. So, yeah, I mean, I had my car. I had CDs stolen from my car, cassettes stolen from my car stolen, my tire slashed. These are different cars. Damn, but I live in L.A. I mean, listen.
Did your tire slashed?
Yeah.
That's someone's pissed off at you.
Yeah, well, no, it was in graffiti. I mean, it was just random. We lived in a place when I was in college where if you wanted to get rid of things, like, I don't mean trash, like we had a couch or chair or, you know, like this thing.
Yeah.
But you put it outside and you wait 24 hours and it was just gone.
Yeah.
I felt like it was part of the universe.
Yeah. I've had my car broken into a couple times. I have not had my house broken into.
I have not had my house broken into.
But I do have some security here. And certainly when we started the radio station, I had to make sure that we were protected here.
Yeah.
But I remember when someone went through my car, because a car is an extension of ourselves.
Oh, you feel totally violated. It's scary.
Some people spend more time in their car than they spend in their house.
Yes.
To know that someone goes through your stuff,
it
violates the hell out of you.
It is. People
feels really dirty.
People who have had their houses broken into, and even if, I mean, sometimes they break in the house and they steal everything. Sometimes they break in the house and they just steal a couple things. It doesn't matter. The psychological trauma of that, if you again, it's all in degrees. It's one thing if you're home and you see the person breaking, and that's even potentially more traumatic. But just to know that someone's been in your house looking through your stuff can absolutely plant a very traumatic seed in your head, cause nightmares. I've seen people move. Not so much because the stuff was stolen, because they feel creepy in their house now.
Yeah. My next door neighbor had a group of reputable tile guys. And they were going to go away for a week. And they're like, we'll have the tile done while we get back. you know, you got a tile guy, you got four guys, and those four guys got outsourced to three other guys, and those three guys are outsourced to two other guys. And next thing you know, you got, and I, he's like, would you keep an eye on the house? I'm like, yeah, but I'm not going to know who the hell's supposed to be there and who's not, because there's so many of them, right? And it was, they had a van with the birds on the side of the van stuff. And so they had a week to just walk through the house. I'm like, dude, I'm not letting anybody in my house unless I'm there. You know, I had the Spectrum people over here. They were super cool. His name was Justin and Joe. They were super nice. And I was here and I stayed with them the entire time. Not because I didn't trust them. I wanted to know. I wanted to learn something, what they were doing. But I mean, like, I'm not going to let, you know.
I've gone the other way.
And even if, because I had people want to use my bathroom. And I'm kind of like.
Well, you don't even let them at your front
door. I'm not going downstairs while they're upstairs. I'm just not because I know human nature. But I mean, to leave and not have someone in my house and have guys. And he's a very trustworthy guy.
Yeah, I do.
He's a great guy. I would never do
that. I've got guys got a front key to my front house. For a key to...
Yeah, well, it's just a matter of time before the wrong guy gets a hold of that.
I got my neighbor watching. Old Matt.
They don't know.
Matt knows. Huh? Matt don't know. I tell him who's coming and who's not coming.
Yeah.
Plus, I know where they all live. I can call them out on TV.
I would rather be...
Well, you don't even let people in your house. Like, you got that whole weird thing.
No, if they call me, let me know.
That's the weirdest thing I've ever... Of all the things, you are the most flexible, easygoing, optimistic, everything.
Yes.
And the only thing that is just... You only have one weird thing, and I've known you now for a long time. And that whole front door, call me before you show up, even if you're my friend, I'm not letting you in my house.
It's my house, yeah.
That is weird. Can we just admit that that's slightly a quirky? Could you say it's quirky?
I think a lot of people do the same thing.
No, a lot of people don't do the same thing. We've talked about this. A lot of people don't do the same thing. No. It's one thing because you even go to somebody you know. If somebody you know comes to your knock on your door, hey, Tony, you won't let him in.
My friends know that they need to call ahead of time.
That's weird.
Yesterday, I was taking a little bit of a nap after church.
Well, that's okay.
11:15, totally cool. And I was sleeping, and someone rings my doorbell.
Yeah.
So I was like, okay, that's either UPS.
Right.
I didn't order anything. Or someone's house is on fire. They need to use the phone. or someone trying to sell me some crap.
Right.
And so I'm like, okay, there's three things I don't really care about. Because everyone's got a phone. They get their fire. They can do that. And so I got up. And, of course, my kids were all kind of rest and relax. And I got up. My kids won't go to the door. Because I tell them, don't go to the door. Because people know to call me.
It's so weird.
So I look out the door. It's my next door neighbor.
Okay.
She's holding a dog. And I'm going. And of course she saw me. And I was like.
That's what I was going to ask you.
So normally I go, good. We're taking a nap. See you. Call me.
You through the door?
Oh, yeah. I just call me. Let me know what you need. Because you just don't come over. But she had just driven to San Antonio to pick up a dog. She drove 13 hours to go pick up this dog, and then she brought it back, and she just got into town, and she wanted Lila to see her new puppy dog. His name is Ruffy.
Okay.
And I was like, oh, and so I opened the door, and so we spent.
Because she saw you. So now
No, because she had a dog.
Okay.
She had a puppy. So it was just her. Probably wouldn't answer the door.
But if she saw you, what do you do? Like, what would you have done? That's so weird.
You got your phone on you?
That's okay.
Call me.
No, come on. Now you're just being funny.
No.
So seriously.
So she had a puppy dog, so we went out there and pet her puppy dog, and then she asked me.
Was it a nice dog? What kind of dog was it?
It was a great dog. It was
Taka Woo?
It had a terrier, some terrier in it. It was 4 months old. Every dog is 4 months old. Well, we'll have Dark Side of the Pooch later on tonight at 8 o'clock. Every dog.
So if I come to your house, I'm going to do this. If I come to your house and come to your front door, you see me. You're going to go call me? You open the damn.
Probably.
Right, and if I called you from.
Well, if you did it, then I know it's an emergency because you know better. So I go, are you okay? Is your leg broken? Are you bleeding? Is someone just kill you?
Or... You know, you wouldn't ask it. You'd tell me to call you. Hi.
No, I'd open the door. Well, I'd take the chain off. And open the door and I go, what do you need? Order it on Amazon. Have a nice day. And I close the door back.
What if I said I got a new sponsor for the show? Well,
then you would definitely call me ahead of time. You would call me ahead of time.
God, Tony.
All right, talk about one of our great sponsors. We got Classic Rock. Before I forget, Dark Side of the Pooch, brand new show tonight, 8 o'clock, with Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. Tomorrow night, Adapt or Perish. I know you're going to be recording some new episodes for that in December. So we got that show going on tomorrow night. Livewire Wednesday, 8 o'clock on Wednesday nights. All ACDC brought to you by Southern Precision Staffing for all your staffing needs. 205-682-2828. 205-682-2828. They are busy because of staffing needs big time. Kai Gregory and his entire staff. Fantastic, guys. They do wonderful work. 205-682-2828. Where your handshake and your words still mean something right here in Hoover, Alabama, but they serve the United States of America. So no matter where you're listening to Tony Curry Radio this morning, you can call them and they can help you in Nebraska or L.A. or whatever. 205-682-2828. Thursday, Austin Hanks has got the show. We had Matt Sorum on from Guns N' Roses last Thursday night. Every week he's got a special guest, and I'm like, I can't believe that ZZ Top's on our show. Guns N' Roses on the show. It's going to be great. That's going Thursday night. And then, of course, on Friday night, it's Damon Johnson's big show. Damon Johnson, we moved last week's show up to Friday night. So Friday night, we did Matt Damon's favorite influential singers
Matt
of
Damon?
All time. Not Matt Damon. Matt.
He's on the show, too?
Damon Johnson. Okay. Matt Damon Johnson. Damon Johnson. Matt Damon may be on the show. Damon Johnson show, the Damon Johnson show. I was thinking of Matt Damon for another story. Damon Johnson, he did his most influential singers of all time.
Yeah.
Freddie Mercury was not on the list.
Really?
Well, that's it.
And that was a fantastic show. That'll replay this week at noon. And this week we're doing his six first songs that he learned in his garage band.
So and by the way, we did post, he released...
God Rest You Merry Gentlemen.
Yeah.
That's an old tune that he did. It's fantastic. And there's a guitar riff in that that Sammy Hagar actually ripped off.
Damon?
Well, he didn't rip it off. He said, I love this guitar riff. Can I use this? And so you can hear that in a Sammy Hagar. I think it's from Red Halo, maybe?
Yeah.
It's a guitar riff.
So Damon
the same,
is just
the
like...
same guitar riff at the beginning of that is the same guitar riff that Sammy Hagar uses in a rock song on one of his albums. Do you know Damon Johnson?
I love Damon.
Was in John Waite's band for 3 years.
Damon's one of these guys.
I'm sitting there talking to him last Wednesday, and I was like, you know, when I was on the road with John Waite, and I said, wait a minute, John Waite of the Babies? Like, missing you, John Waite? And he's like, yeah. And I was like, dude, really? And he's like, yeah, because I did. I was like, the guy's amazing.
In the Rolling Stones? Who?
For too long.
Wait, was he one of the Beatles that you didn't see? The
I'm telling you, man, the guy is just, he's just amazing. His shows on at 8 o'clock on Friday nights are just a joy, man. They're great. So. Tony Curry Radio, your home for Curry and Clape in the morning, 7:30 to 9:30 every Monday through Friday. You can also hear a show, a replay from 6 until 8 Monday through Friday. And then, of course, brand new shows, The Damon Johnson Show, Blues Almighty with Austin Hanks on Thursday nights, Adapt or Perish, and also the Livewire Wednesday show with ACDC. That show will be going off Wednesday night at 8 o'clock. I've been doing that show live for a long period of time, and I've tried to record it. It just doesn't sound the same when I record it. Man, I just like has my head spinning to like midnight on Wednesday nights. I love that show. I love doing that show.
I know.
It's a blast. Brought to you by Southern Precision Staffing for all your staffing needs, 205-682-2828. You sent me the story about Kanye. We talked about this because you weren't quite sure if they were separated or what was going on. I said, no, Kanye says that he hasn't received any paperwork and he thinks everything's, he knows they ain't cool, but, and he obviously knows what's going on with Pete Davidson, which is still a really bizarre story, and they've evidently continued that. Someone sent out a tweet this past weekend. Someone got a selfie taken with Pete and Kim while they were out somewhere and posted it, and I made big news. But it appears that she's really enjoying his company. It may be just be a different kind of relationship. He makes her laugh. Maybe it's something where she's not, I don't know, maybe it's not, maybe it's a situation. Listen, Kim's beautiful. She can get whatever she wants. Pete is
Pete's got problems.
Pete's kind of a goofy-looking dude, but he's a comedian. He's funny. And, again, we're not going to be shallow here. It means more than just what you look like. But when you see Pete and Kim, it doesn't look like a good couple.
Right.
So, evidently, Kanye came out again, the story you sent me a couple of days ago.
I don't understand what
he's
saying.
And he's kind of like, well, he wants to be...
No, I understand what he was saying, but the quote, he just... He
wants to be back with his family. He wants to be back with his kids. He says all the right things. It seems like he's Seems like his Christianity, if you want to call it that, has evolved to an extent. He talks about being a great father. I wasn't raised that way, and it's important that my kids have me in their life, and blah, 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 blah. And then he talks about these moments where, you know, I want to be back home with Kim, and I'm going to make sure that I have a house right on top of hers so I can be part of my kids' lives. They got four children.
What does that mean, a house on top of hers?
He wants to be as close to the kids as possible, and regardless of whether she moves on or she doesn't move on, I think she's this sounds a little like this is going to be a weird analogy, but Jane Fonda and Ted Turner, for some reason. She loves Ted Turner. She still loves Ted Turner.
Yeah, I know, yeah.
And she's like, I still love him. And he's the world to me. And there will never be another man like him, but I can't be married to him.
Oh, kind of like a dumb.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, a little bit. And so I don't have any thought or any doubt that Kim still has feelings for Kanye and loves him. Can she handle his drama? Now, this may have to do with whether he's on his pharmaceuticals, on his meds for his bipolar, whatever. She's like, it sounds like the kind of guy that is continually having to apologize. I want to do it right. He tells a great story, and then he screws up again and again and again and again and again, almost like an addict. And you're kind of like,
yes,
okay, I want to make this work with you. I want to be with you. But you keep saying all the right things, but then you don't follow through on it. And I think that's where it's kind of sad, because I feel for him, Kanye, the fact that he's seeing his wife evolve into this new relationship, and no one knows really know what it is. They're spending a lot of time together, and you're like, you're married to this woman. You have children with this woman, and you're having to live through this and see this. And again, he's like, I don't look through the tabloids. I don't listen to what people say, blah, blah, blah. I know what the truth is. And I'm kind of like, well, you're living in la-la land,
this
dude.
This whole thing is just like, I didn't realize that Pete Davidson, Jules brought this to my attention. I guess I forgot or didn't realize. And I was thinking about this as you were talking, because I'm going to sound shallow as a psychologist, and I don't mean it this way. So Pete Davidson had a childhood of problems. He was hospitalized, per his own report, at least a couple times as a child in a psychiatric hospital for self-injury stuff. And he only as an adult got a diagnosis of borderline personality disorder, which is they don't even use it anymore, but you don't use that diagnosis lightly. It is a tough diagnosis. It is, first of all, anything that is a personality characteristic type disorder, I mean, essentially says that your constitution, who you are, is, it's not that it's bad, it's unhealthy,
yeah,
right, for those around you. So, I mean, again, Kanye's got documented psychiatric problems, the bipolar piece, and whether he's on his meds, off his meds, we've seen him in some periods where, you know, first it was creativity. Look, a lot of people who have bipolar disorder, when they go off their meds, is when they feel incredibly creative, etc. He's also a creative kind of guy, so it gets to be a little difficult. But when they was in the ranch and all that kind of stuff, I mean, some pretty erratic behavior.
Yeah.
But now with Pete Davidson, like, this is weird. I mean, I should not say it this way, because you shouldn't. These are people with mental health problems.
Yeah.
And I am a huge advocate of get your help. It's like any other chronic condition. But at the same time, Kim, what are you doing? Like, what are you doing? Like, I just don't. And I told you this. I don't know Kim Kardashian. I don't know what her sort of whole thing is. I've always played her in my mind as somebody who knew exactly what she was. It's almost like Nick Saban. She always knows exactly what she's doing.
Well, if she believes that they're separated and that a divorce is inevitable.
You know, I understand that, but why
Pete Kanye Davidson? Doesn't. Well, and I'm going to go a step further. Pete Davidson needs to step away.
Yeah.
This is not a good look for Pete Davidson.
No.
I mean, you're dating a married woman.
Homewrecker.
You're a homewrecker.
Yeah, no, I think that's
and
a really
I don't
good
think
point.
It's a good look. I think originally it was a good look for him to be seen with her.
Just hang
and
out.
They did a skit together on Saturday Night Live, and they kissed her. That's fine. Hang out. Have the post party. He does not need to be hanging
out
with
her.
That's
a really good point.
Because he needs to be the bigger guy here. And I don't care what his psychiatric situation is.
No,
he's fine now. He's fine now, or at least he's because he's
no, no. That decision,
Pete needs to come, and he can come, and he can even use it to his advantage and come out publicly and say, "Listen, Kim and I have had a blast. I don't know if they've gotten intimate. I don't have an idea. My thought process is they haven't. They haven't gone all the way out yet. But he needs to say, "Listen, Kim is a wonderful person, and I would love to spend more time with her, but." This situation where she's still married to Kanye, they need to work their things out. I'm stepping away, and people would love him.
Listen,
for that.
Listen.
People would love him.
Take,
for that.
Take it back. Take it back from celebrity land to, you know, the rest of us land. When you're separated, usually it is. There's no law about it, but usually when you're separated, there is some sort of agreement about what you're going to do. We're separated for a reason. We're not divorced. We're separated. We're living in different, for some reason, we're giving some time and space. I see that a lot after infidelity. People do separate. And the separation is literally to give people some time and space to kind of figure out what's going on without constantly having to see that person. I totally get that. But when you're separated, when you're married, you're not just separated in perpetuity. Like there's something that's supposed to happen. You're going to get back together. You're not going to get back together. It's something. So this is where it gets weird because, and I've seen couples where they're separated. Okay, we're separated. We've been separated for a year. You know, maybe we're filing for divorce. Yep. And depending on where you live, it's still in process. But we are moving on. I'm going to go and, I'm going to date and you're going to date. And the paperwork's going to come in later. Because that happens. Depending on where you live, sure. That comes in later. But if that's not kind of on the table, this is where we're going, and you're just in the we're separated period, you should not be dating other people without a discussion with your spouse. First of all, you shouldn't even be doing it.
Yeah.
Like if you're going to be dating other people, then go ahead and file for divorce.
Exactly.
Which is, you forget the religious.
Don't pull the old, I need to see what else there. I realized after I saw someone else that the grass wasn't greener.
Well, yeah, but you can't do that. That's fine when you're dating.
Exactly. When you're married.
With kids, you've made a.
I don't have a problem with, I went through. Well, it was a very short separation because I demanded that we work through it. I was like, I'm not doing this because she was going to move and we had kids. I'm like, no, that's not happening.
Right.
I said, now, if you want to separate, that's fine. You want to get away from this. You need time to think.
Mm-hmm.
That's totally cool. But we're going to have rules here. And I want to know, okay, how long are we doing this? Is it a week? Is it a month? Is it a year? Because there's two people here that have to be on the same page. Some cases, maybe both people want to separate. It works out well. And sometimes they get back together again.
Absolutely. This is just.
But I'm not living this. I need more time thing after 3 or 4 months. I'm like, okay, what are we doing here?
Because
you got two
okay.
lives that need to move on.
But I think you could say,
But to bring another person into the situation.
That's exactly. That's
and I don't know if Pete was the one that courted her. I'm betting she courted him. She liked him. She found it, and he felt like she was titillated by his humor and his sense of character. And she was probably. And I'm betting that he's. Like most comedians, really insecure.
Yeah.
And it felt really good to have Kim flipping Kardashian like me.
Well,
and I don't know too many guys that would be able to say no to that. But he's Pete Davidson, for God's sakes. He's one of the most beloved, wonderful comedic actors out there. And he needs, and he's been totally transparent with his life.
He needs to say,
I mean, here's a guy who's gotten his tattoos taken. I mean, he tells everything. Maybe that's what she loves about him, that he's not so private. But he needs to say, listen, I'm not getting in the middle of this. I like you, and he can tell her, I love you. I want to be with you.
Right.
I think we got a future here.
Go take care of business.
But go take care of business. You need to go, someone needs to get inside of Kanye's head and tell him what the hell's going on, because he acts like nothing's going on.
This is once again where we, who are not in their inner circles, we love to speculate, which is, it's not fine, but we do it. We're filling in all these gaps. He acts like nothing's going on. Like, my fundamental belief about people is particularly when there's that much out there that is known. Again, think about your neighbors. Mm-hmm. you know, I saw him with another woman, and she saw him with the other woman, and they have kids. And, you know, you're making all this speculation, and you go, well, they probably, you know, she probably has no idea what's going on. They do know what's going on. Like, I want to know things like, what kind of prenups do they have? Because particularly for people like this, you've talked about this with celebrities. With celebrities, and not just celebrities, people who have lots of wealth and lots of... It is more than there is the let me step this back. This works for anybody. If you two people come into a relationship in an ideal situation, now, granted, if you come in when you're super young and you have nothing coming into the relationship, no money, no material possessions, no kids, you both got nothing. But coming into, let's say you're older, you got a business, you got a house, she's got a house, they got a, you know. It becomes, it is, I mean, that's what the marriage license, marriage is a contract. It's not, mm-hmm. It is not just a spiritual thing, right? So going into this, you know that they got lawyers who've got some sort of arrangements going on. So there's a part of me that wonders if some of this isn't being driven to some degree by contractual nature. Or Kanye's off his meds.
And I just say this: if you're gonna go and you both agree, normally both sides don't agree to a separation. Normally, one person wants to separate, right. The other person wants to work through it, and they because they want to. In a lot of cases, I'm cool. Take your time, but okay, what are we gonna do to fix this? We obviously
issues. You can separate. You can let's call what it is. When you say separate. It's physically separate. I'm going to live here. Yeah. You're going to live here because we need some space. Now, I see there's a lot of couples who physically separate and they're going to marriage counseling.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? It's just.
That's what I'm saying.
Yeah.
Or you just separate and okay, what are you going to do?
Right.
I'm going to go live with my mom for 3 months. Okay. All right. Well.
Why?
Why?
I think that's a reasonable.
You need some time to think. That's fine. Okay. But how are we? Because when you come back, I'm still here. And we still have the same issues. So how are we going to work through this? Let's make a game plan. If you truly, because a lot of people are incredibly passive. They don't want to break hearts. They don't want to kill children. And so they go, I want to separate. With the idea that they're not going to stay, they're not getting back together again. I would bet 75% of people who want a separation don't really want to put anything into it. They're running away from the problem.
I agree with.
I'm not saying you got to go see a marriage counselor the next day. But that's going to be, okay, if you're going to leave, then what's our plan here? What are we going to do to try to fix this? Because obviously we have a lot of stuff to work
through. Well, but you could say, I agree with everything you're saying. But you could also say that part of the way that we're going to try to fix this is I need some time away from you.
Sure.
I need time away for you. And part of the way we're fixing this is I need some, because I do agree with you. There's a lot of times where the separation is sort of it's passive, but it's almost like it's the safer step. I don't want to call it now. I don't want to call it right now and call it divorce. I'm pretty sure that's where we're going, but I'm holding out. There's enough hope that I'm holding out. So I do think you can say when a couple separates, whether it's one or both, we both need some time to live it by ourselves and figure out what we want for ourselves in the world with ground rules. Yep. You absolutely have ground rules. No, we're not dating other people. First of all, if you go get separated and one of the two spouses is like, can we date? Right? We're done.
Get out.
We're done. Yep. But I do think you can separate and say part of the process is I need to live my life away from you independently for a while to understand if I want to be back with you.
Yep.
And I agree with you too. You can save that. You say, well, how long? I don't know. Well, let's put some time barriers on it. Let's try it for a month.
Yeah, because you're putting the other person's life on hold.
Right.
If I'm a person that wants to make it work and I'm willing to go to all lengths to make that happen and you need some time away, okay, well, how much time do you need?
Well, I think, you know, I think I need a month for right now.
Okay, great. Right.
And then let's revisit.
30 days. Now, but you see, obviously, when you have kids, that's going to be, it's going to throw everything off kilter because the kids are going to go, what the hell? Why is this? You know, and I was in a situation where I'm not moving.
Well, that's a whole.
You know, I mean, it's like, okay.
That's a whole
but,
thing.
Yeah.
Well, the other thing I think a lot of kids don't realize, or I mean, I didn't when I was a kid, when my parents, when my parents said they were getting a divorce, physically, they were just separating. Yeah. Because there's the process, right? So, but you know, you're not going to tell a small child, mommy and daddy are separating and contemplating getting a divorce. There's mommy and daddy are living apart for a while, and we're trying to work through some things. That's what you tell the kids. And
it's funny though, because
if in fact that's
separation,
right?
I hate separation. I do because I'm like, we got problems. Let's work
this out. I know
you need some time. That's fine.
Well, you need space.
Yeah. And depending on how much space you've given that person before you separate, right. Maybe they've had plenty of time. Maybe they just, for whatever reason, it seems very, very passive to me because separation is the first step to divorce. And I know there's some people who got separated and get back together again.
No, yeah. But it is. It's the first step. But it's not inevitable, but yes.
So we're going to work it out. But there's nothing else in life that works that way. Yeah. Hey, listen, I love working here. But I need to step away for 3 or 4 months and make sure this is the right job for me. I got news for you.
Yeah, but there's nothing like marriage. No. Not the same thing.
Kids at school. I really like you. We're not getting along. I don't want to play with you for the next month. I want to see how it... There's nothing else in life that's a separation like a marriage separation.
I know.
I call bullshit on it because...
I'm telling you,
And it takes two sides to feel the same way because I'm telling you, just based on my experiences, my personal experience, but personal experiences with other people, there's always one person that wants it more than the other.
Absolutely.
Because the person that initiates the separation, they're the one that want to get out or they need the time away. Okay.
And
the only way you can make it work from the person who wants to make it work is to allow that. It's the whole let the thing go, and if it loves you, it'll come back. You know, you don't want to squeeze it to death, right?
No, squeeze it. But yeah, no, I totally agree with you. But I don't want to send the message. Here's the message I don't want to send, because it a lot of times that separation is an opportunity for one or both sides to think about before they get divorced. What do I want my life to be like? And you need sometimes the physical separation to figure that out. So I agree with you. It is a step towards divorce as compared to not separating. But here's the only piece where I would twist that. If you need some space from one another and you say, but we're not doing it because we're not going to physically separate, you actually may blow the thing up.
Yeah.
But potentially, you may blow it up, meaning that if you would have taken the step to separate, you may have been able to get your heads in a better place.
Yep.
Now, that it's always a judgment call. You never know for sure, but I don't always want to put the separation in as an inevitable. It's your relationship's a big shit trouble.
Yeah.
But which relationship was already in big shit trouble.
Yeah.
And that's my only point.
Because it gives both sides a chance. I mean, if you're not the one, if you think everything's going just rosy, and the person wants to split, it gives you time to think, okay, what am I doing wrong here? What can I do?
Well, yeah, right. Last thing you want to do, if your partner wants to separate from you, the last thing you want to do is the way you described it. I know you don't mean this way. The way you described it is, okay, I'm just going to hang out here.
Yeah, don't change.
I'll be here for a second. I got a lot of chores to do.
Yeah.
And yeah.
But, you know, the other thing is after, depending on how long you've been married and what your kid's situation is, again, the kids totally throw everything into.
Absolutely.
It shakes the cage. Yeah, separation sounds good. That's why guys go to Vegas for a week with their friends.
Right.
I like this. I like not being told what to do. I like, you know, being able to do whatever the hell I want. Da 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 da. And it's really, really great. But most guys who are in love or obviously are in a loving relationship, in a relationship where you make sacrifices, you do things to make things good, you miss those things. You want to come back. That's passively breaking up in relationships. I don't like I'm in a funk. I need some time away.
But
you go on date a couple other people and it doesn't work, and then you always fall back in love with them again, but then nothing changes. So you're kind of in the same situation. It happens in dating all the time. But it's different in dating. Yeah, it's a lot different. It's not contractual. You haven't given yourself to each other under God's eyes either.
That's right. But if you get to the point, if you're like Kanye and Kim, you either have papers being filed.
Do you think she's filed papers?
Again,
he says he doesn't say anything.
I think it's complicated, right? Just, I don't know why. Maybe it's not complicated. I feel like if you're their representation.
She's not helping the cause.
No. And that's what I'm saying is I don't know if she hasn't said to him, literally.
But he's also admitted infidelity.
Right. So I don't know if she hasn't said to him, oh, we're done.
Yeah.
And he's there. Why? We're not done. We're done.
And she's also supported him.
Yeah.
She showed up to his Donde thing. So, I mean, she's supporting him.
Yeah, the whole thing is just.
It's really weird.
There are pieces. I was going to say there's a piece missing. There are a gazillion pieces missing. This is one of those ones where everybody talks about it, and all of us should say, it's beyond speculation. There are so many missing pieces that we don't understand.
He sounds like he's really sick, and she has compassion for that.
That's
and
exactly.
She does
and
love
and she
him.
May be, and she like may it, be like kind it. Of waiting till he gets, because I was looking at some of his statements.
Because she supports him. She still loves him.
She has kids. They got kids together.
Yeah. Yeah, it's kind of sad.
That and was Entertainment Tonight, brought to you by Kareem Claypool.
And then you just kind of hope he finds himself or gets on the right medications in time to save it.
Well,
I'd love to see those two back together again. I don't know why.
Well, and I like what you said about Pete Davidson. Pete Davidson could play a super. I didn't even say could. It's not even just the optics. He really should. And in fact, even if Kim's saying we're done, Kanye and I are done, and I'm in love with you. Then you're right. The right thing for him to say is, you know what?
We've done shows on this, haven't we?
Yeah. I love you too. I love you more than anything else. You need to fix that or end it. You've got kids. Pete Davidson, what must your kids
and think? Why won't most guys do that? Because there's either some voodoo putang involved or they're afraid they're going to lose that individual.
Yeah.
Or she's going to go back to her husband.
Right.
And in that case, you should.
Well, so he's doing it. Well, or they do with the back and forth.
Mm. Yeah.
You really need to, but I love you.
Yeah.
You really go.
Yeah, she may be telling him, hey, we're separated, we're getting divorced, da 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 da. And that gives him the out to go, we'll continue to see each other. But every time he's doing his selfies and.
I hope he's stable. I mean, I just hope he's getting the help that he says he's gotten and that he's in, you know, again, he seems
it's
to.
It's one of his multiple personalities that's going out with Kim. Maybe it's not really Pete. That was very shallow of me.
Because that was incredible.
That was really shallow. Was,
but it's okay because you were deep for like at least 90 minutes.
Yeah.
So you just came up for, you know.
He's out of Josh Claypool. I'm Tony Curry, the Curry and Claypool Show. You can hear us every Monday through Friday morning right here on the Tony Curry Radio app. Download the Tony Curry Radio app. It's free. It's 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. A great classic rock, great shows, special fresh shows every single night of the week at 8 o'clock. Later on tonight, Dark Side of the Pooch with Dr. Rab Stewart from the Rossbridge Animal Hospital. We'll have him on. Get after it and make sure you listen to us. And, of course, so you can also hear our replay between 6 and 8 every Monday through Friday night before those big premieres every single night of the week at 8 o'clock.